You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to tonight's live broadcast of TPC, Saturday evening, March the 29th. We even had that extra Saturday in this month, five Saturdays during our annual March around the world, and every minute was chock full of incredible content. That will continue tonight as well as we wrap up March around the world with the one and only Germar Rudolph. It has been a wonderful series this year. Last week with Charles Balsman in Russia and Simon Roche in South Africa. But now I think to put a wonderful capstone on all of the discussions we've been having with thought leaders and elected officials from around the world this month, Germar is the one you want to end with. And he is with us now. Germar, it is great to have you back. Okay, I think we've got him now. Germar, it's great to have you back.
Yes, thank you for having me again. You can hear me?
Well, yes, we hear you loud and clear, and it was actually this time last year that you made your debut appearance on this program, even after all this time, though I had been familiar with your work for more than two decades, certainly going back to even the years predating the beginning of this program, which began in 2004. But you came on just last year at this time where we were transitioning from this special series into what we do in April with Confederate History Month. So it's almost been a year to the day since your first appearance, and it is great to have you back tonight. And just a reminder of everyone, I think, you know, certainly you look at Germar Rudolph's background. Go to germarrudolph.com and familiar yourself with it, by the way. But, you know, the education, he is a scholar for sure, and a man with a very high level of intelligence, having gone to and obtained his master's degree in chemistry at the University of Bonn in Germany, and then, of course, his postgraduate Ph.D. There at the Max Planck Institute, which is one of the most prestigious institutions in all of the world in Stuttgart. And you can read more about it there, what his theses were on, and it really just sets a standard for bona fides that you'll want to know about if you don't know about his work, and but surely you do. So, Germar, where should we begin tonight? I mean, I guess let's just start. I do want to talk to you about the situation with Mahmoud Khalil. I think you are, of course, a wonderfully fascinating and interesting guest to offer an informed perspective on that as someone who has spent time in prison as a result of your speech, not for ever having committed a crime, but for what you believe, what you believe with as a result of your search for truth. But before we do that, I mean, do you want to chime in on Germany at all, just as we wrap up this series where we're checking in on these different places around the world where our people hail? Very quickly before we bring Keith on, just the state of situation in Germany with regards to migration and great replacement and anything going on there in Central Europe or beyond that you would like to weigh in on as we get things started tonight.
Well, Germany is probably the country first and most intensely struck by demographic collapse, which inevitably results in mass immigration. If you have the underbelly, the young population pretty much not existing due to birth or reproduction denial, then your society either collapses or you have to have immigration. Of course, this conundrum, this problem, Germany has been facing that since the late 1960s. I think a year after I was born, the anti-baby pill was introduced, and from there it was a nosedive, a catastrophic nosedive, a collapse of births. And there is no way out of this except making radical political changes on various fronts to get people to embrace love, life, children, and family again, or to go with populations that still embrace that, that come from elsewhere. So Germany has been at the forefront of that, and they have the quote-unquote enviable position of being an attractive immigration country and can kind of pick who's coming to their country. And other countries that go to a similar process of collapse, from Russia to Poland to Italy, Greece, Spain, you name them, most European countries, they are not in a position where they can compensate their loss of population with immigrants. So it's a double-edged sword. I've seen it with my mother reporting in her later years, very frequently at old age, going to the hospital, that the German health sector, 80-90% of employees of people working there are immigrants or descendants of immigrants. So if you were to remove all the immigrants out of Germany, German society would collapse. It would not function.
Well, Gumar, this is Keith Alexander. I'm a co-host with James. I don't know that we've spoken before. We may have. But let me tell you that in America, and I think in all white nations, we have that similar problem of a birth dearth. And right. In America, particularly here in the South, it became a problem with the advent of the civil rights movement. And I think that the big problem is that when white people don't think their children are going to have it as good as them or even better, they stop reproducing. Do you have that phenomenon in Germany or not?
I don't think so much it is about they might not have it better or as good as we. That is, objectively speaking, neither true nor I think most people perceive it that way. What we are facing is hedonism, materialism, egotism. Values that have been pushed by leftist ideologues since the beginning of the 20th century, if you wish. In Germany, in particular, after the war, the German elites in the social departments, the social fields of social studies, have been populated with immigrants, many of them Jewish, left-wing radical thinkers, the so-called Frankfurt School that were trained during the war at Columbia University, if I'm not mistaken. They came to Germany. Professors there were replaced.
They left from the University of Frankfurt and then went to Columbia and then came back.
And they were again in Frankfurt then, and Frankfurt was the hotbed of social reengineering of Germany to destroy family values and to implement this ideology of hedonism, materialism, egotism, emancipation, whatever that means, emancipation from family, from children, from love, basically. Love yourself and you will be happy. This is the biggest bullshit ever taught, but this is kind of what has been taught by the Frankfurt School, with the intended aim of destroying German fertility and fecundity to undermine Germans' ability to maintain a population, to maintain its society, to maintain themselves. So that is one of the many ways the Allies have, during and after the war, tried to genocidally erase Germany off the map, and that's the effect we're seeing. They have not implemented the Morgenthau Plan or the revised Morgenthau Plan that was initiated in between 45 and 47, mostly implemented, but then terminated because of the Cold War. The Germans were wanted by both sides of the Iron Curtain as potential cannon fodder in the Cold War turning hot. Never happened, fortunately. But ideologically speaking, the replacement of the German social elites by these immigrants has been completely successful, and the re-engineering of the German mind. And this is a virus, I would say, a behavioral virus implemented in the German psyche that, like every kind of real biological warfare working with viruses and bacteria, cannot be limited to the target population but spreads everywhere. And that's what you are seeing. It's spreading throughout all European and European descendant populations. This materialism, hedonism, You just need to make
you know,
a simple
Germany
math.
Was like the Germany. Excuse me, just a minute. Germany was like the ground zero for all of this too, because
right.
You had the Weimar Republic, which was you know all of these cultural Marxists and whatnot. People like the guy that invented both racism and transgenderism. What was his name? Hirschfeld. That's right, Magnus Hirschfeld. People like that. You had a terrible anti-family virus basically brought on to the Germans by the Jewish population there, and that's what led to Hitler, right?
Well, we'll let him answer that when we come back. We will take our first break. But while we were at this break, unless you're listening on the AM dial and are driving, if you're listening at home on your phone, take advantage of the next 2 minutes to go to GermarRudolph.com, GermarRudolph, GermarRudolph.com. There'll be a lot for you to get into there, and we'll come back and talk more about the freedom of speech.
I've met a lot of great people throughout TPC's 20-year run, and one of the very first was Michael Gaddy. He was down on the border with the Minutemen Project back in those days, calling into the studio from a payphone with live reports. He was fighting to preserve our nation then, and he still is. Let me ask you something. Does true history matter to you? Would you like to know authentic history or what is taught in government schools and universities? The choice is yours. Michael Gaddy has on display at his Substack a wealth of information from original source documents on both the founding era of our country and the South's Second War for Independence. Check him out at Michael Gaddy, GADDY.substack.com. If the truth matters to you, you won't regret taking the time. Join the conversation now at michaelgaddy.substack.com.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't want to spend much more time on the current state of Germany, only because Germar and I had exchanged a few emails earlier this week, and we are bringing him on to actually talk about something different. But I did want to at least begin with that, and I guess suffice it to say, Germany has not returned yet to the domestic successes of the mid to late 1930s, but this is something that Sascha Rossmuller had covered a few weeks ago. One thing I want to ask Germar is this, and this will be a question that leads to, I think, an interesting discussion. Should we, and by we I mean whites, Europeans, should we be, and Americans particularly, because it happened here, should we be concerned about the arrest of green card holder Mahmoud Khalil for his dissident opinion on Palestine? So this has been in the news here in the United States recently, and I think Germar Rudolph, to me and for my money, this is a man I respect, by the way, and let me just go on the record by saying Germar is a man I respect very much for a lot of reasons, not the least of which being the fact that he has paid a price for what he believes. That is when you can separate the men from the boys. Anybody can run their mouths, but when the screws get tightened to you, when you get put in prison, that's where the men step forward, and that's what we've got here right now. This is a German chemist and author who has been sentenced to prison for years for his beliefs. So I think when I ask him his perspective, his informed perspective on a freedom of speech issue like this, everybody needs to sit and listen attentively. So again, Germar, the question is, Mahmoud Khalil, should we be concerned, and are you concerned, and how do you reconcile that with some of your trials and tribulations?
It is a deja vu experience. For me, fortunately, this time I'm not the one arrested, sitting in deportation detention, awaiting my removal, involuntary departure, as they call it, from the United States back to my home country. That's what he is facing, and that's what I went through in 2005. So I have been in exactly the same shoes. He He's married to a U.S. citizen who, at his arrest, was 8 months pregnant. She may have given birth by now. When that happened to me, I was married to a U.S. citizen, and I had a baby of 7 months old. So, yes, we have to be concerned. The one difference between my case from 2005 and, two differences, actually, and Khalil's case is that Khalil already had a green card, whereas I had only the conditions, the legal conditions to be entitled to a green card accepted and certified by the government, and all I needed to do is the formal step of applying for the green card, and that I was denied. I was just arrested when trying to get to that counter, so to say, intercepted on the last few steps. Khalil, they want to revoke his green card. So the law says clearly you can have a green card only revoked when you have been sentenced to a certain type of crime. And in some cases, you have to be sentenced twice, depending on which way you came into the country and what your exact status is. I don't know exactly how that is with Khalil, but I do know, by the admission of the authorities, that he has no police record, so he has not been sentenced for anything, and they are also not prosecuting him for any crime, even though he was involved in demonstrations. The administration is unhappy about that because they are unconditionally loyal to what Israel wants and demands and sees fit. There is nothing that, according to what has been reported and claimed, Khalil did that could have been a violation of law. So, if the government succeeds in the courts, as we're going through the federal court system right now, to be allowed to have Khalil deported, that then will potentially affect not just me, but any dissident who is in a similar position, because that sets case law that the U.S. government is allowed to violate the law, and the case law will kind of lift that law, destroy that law, and makes permanent legal residence a piece of paper worth not the paper it's written on. I am personally scared that what I went through 20 years, which was very traumatizing, and much more to my ex-wife, unfortunately, it was the first step of my marriage to my U.S. wife being ruined, but also to me. And Khalil goes through that now. The second difference is Khalil will be sent back to his native Syria, which is not a nice place to be, but at least he won't be put in prison there. I was sent to Germany, which is kind of a nice place to be if you don't end up in prison, but I did end up in prison there and had to spend 44 months for the books I've written. So, yes, we should be concerned by law being completely rewritten by the federal court system, the Supreme Court, turning legal immigration into something that becomes haphazard, that becomes dangerous, and freedom of speech being basically destroyed for anyone who is not a citizen. So in the First Amendment, it doesn't say you have to be a citizen to have free speech. It says you have free speech when you're in the country. But this also will no longer be the case.
It reminds me very much of Ernst Zundel's situation as well. Some, you know, obviously some similarities. I have the Ernst Zundel original print at home, and this was his situation, of course, where he was seized and deported and also put in prison. Happened very nearly around the time of yours, Garmar. But this situation with Mahmoud Khalil is obviously much more recent. Keith,
well, I'm kind of two minds on this, Garmar, because our experience with Muslims over here is that they're not interested in assimilating. They're not interested in becoming Americans and part of our culture. I think that he's having his First Amendment rights violated, and as you said, that's not dependent on being a citizen or anything like that. But it all gets down to the same old bugaboo, the Jewish question. You know, in America, if you cross the Jews, you have no future in business or in politics or anything else.
Whether you're a German or a Syrian,
right. And see, that's a problem that we just haven't been able to. If you do defy them, you're going to be cast into the outer darkness. I don't know if that's the same situation in Germany, but that's, you know, I'm not making any excuses for the Trump administration. They have gone whole hog in for, you know, being philo-Semitic. But on the other hand, you know, Muslim immigration certainly has ruined Germany in a lot of ways.
Okay, that's a good question. That was actually something, Germar, I wanted to get your opinion on. I can understand, of course, your concern with this because it's a situation that so closely mirrors what your own hell that you went through about 20 years ago. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, this is the question. Is it a question just purely in your mind of freedom of speech? Or because you see a lot of people on our side who think that because the Muslims have problems with Jewish power and influence and we have problems with it, that there is some sort of a partnership that can be had there. But frankly, I mean, to Keith's point, when have the Muslims ever helped us? And this is not necessarily related directly, is tangentially related to Mahmoud Khalil. I would agree with you in principle on his situation, but they never have. They've always been adversarial to Europe and to white interests. They're a 85 IQ
battle of tours
level type of people. You look at what they've done in Germany. If they are allowed to come into our countries, they rape, they murder. You know, how many of their people are fretting over the plight of white people as some of our people fret over theirs? Can you differentiate those two truths?
They're two different, completely different issues. How do I treat a person that has a legal status compared to what legal status are we as a nation, as a society, willing to grant to whom? On following which criteria, and that should be, of course, a matter of democratic consensus and of following laws that exists, which can be amended, again, with majorities going this way. And that's a completely different discussion that we need to have. Do we want certain types of immigrants? And I can see a point being made that maybe in a nation that is self-defined, that has been built around certain values, immigrants coming in that do not share, do not want to share that those values should not be embraced as other immigrants that do share and embrace those values. This is a fair observation to make and a choice in a democracy that the society that we as voters should be allowed to make. Yes, and if the decision is no, we don't want more of these for that and that reason, as long as it all follows with a decent way of applying those decisions, meaning you're not misusing people, then it's all right. Now, Khalil has already a certain legal status. The decision of whether we should have granted him and others of his kind this in the first place is a different discussion. I could not contribute to that because I don't know how he came, why he came, what his legal claims were. I assume it was based on him being married to a U.S. citizen. This is not something that you can question. There are a lot of immigrants that have come into this country way, way more questionable.
So,
but when you love someone, when you get married, when you have a family, if you step in as a government and destroy that because you don't like someone's views, I don't care what the background of that person or that family is, and that this is just evil. You don't do that.
Yeah, I understand. I think you're right as well, is that it's a separate issue. The only thing that makes it a separate issue, I guess, is the fact that he's a Muslim, and then you have to get into the grand scheme of things as well. I mean, should we really care that much? But I see why Germar cares.
The thing is, we just have so much care to be parceled out, and quite frankly, I'm more in line with, you know, trying to defend the rights of white people, the way we see it. We don't see you as a German or as an Austrian or as Estonian. In America, we see you as white or non-white. And with the Muslims, you also have the religious.
Our friend Jason Kessler just commenting, there should be a total moratorium on immigration. Recognizing the legal status of brown invaders based on how well they are assimilating should be a priority. I get that. I mean, that's a true statement, too. But I see Germar's point as well. If the president is set here with this guy, you know, where does it stop? That's the thing. I'm going to make a statement about freedom of speech when I come back. And I'll be interested to hear Germar's response. Stay tuned.
How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Death toll from that massive earthquake in Myanmar has risen now to 1,644. Officials say the numbers will likely continue to climb as more victims are found in the rubble. More than 3,500 people injured. That quake measured 7.7, one of the biggest in ages. President Trump continues to talk about the United States taking control of Greenland.
While Vice President Vance and a U.S. delegation visited an American military base in Greenland on Friday, the president once again said the U.S. needs the island for international security.
We have to have Greenland. It's not a question of, do you think we can do without it? We can't.
During his visit, the vice president said military force would not be necessary, insisting that the people of Greenland will want to partner with the U.S. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Also at townhall.com, Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton says China's numerous incursions into Taiwan's airspace and waters are, quote, deeply troubling.
It gives the People Liberation Army's Air Force and Navy more opportunities to train for the operation in which they might go for the jugular in Taiwan. It puts severe stress on Taiwan and Japan's military, both their equipment and their people.
A passenger flight preparing to leave the nation's capital and an incoming military jet both received instructions to divert and prevent a possible collision. Delta Flight 2983 was cleared for takeoff at Ronald Reagan, the same time that four U.S. Air Force aircraft were inbound. The jets were heading for a flyover at Arlington National Cemetery when the Delta aircraft received an onboard alert of a nearby plane. More on these stories, townhall.com.
You've heard me talk about Relief Factor and how so many people enjoy a better, more pain-free life because of it. If you're dealing with everyday pain, it makes sense you'd want to try it first. Well, Relief Factor makes that pretty pain-free, too, with their three-week quick start kit for only $19.95. An easy, affordable way to see how it could literally change your life, like it has mine. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or eliminate pain. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Trying it couldn't be easier with their three-week quick start for only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. And it just takes a phone call to 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, every day you feel better is a day you live better. Try Relief Factor's three-week quick start. Visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 800-4-RELIEF for Relief Factor.
God tells us in Hebrews 10:25 that we should gather together to worship him. This isn't a request, it is a command. Going to church isn't an option, it is your Christian duty. With the hellish apostasy of mainstream churches, attending church these days can be difficult. That is why our King James only traditional services in the ancient church of St. Mary Magdalene are live, online, and I invite you to gather with our congregation to study God's holy word. Join us every Sunday at thetemplarchurch.com and especially on the first Sunday of the month for Holy Communion. This do in remembrance of me is also a command that all Christians must obey. I am Reverend Jim Dowson, ordained Puritan minister, nationalist and a veteran pro-life campaigner. Tune in to my weekly sermons at thetemplarchurch.com. Based in Ireland, this old-time religion is the faith that built America. God bless you.
Hey, y'all. Do you enjoy great-tasting coffee but are tired of supporting companies that hate you? If so, let me tell you about Above Time Coffee. Above Time Coffee is a privately owned and operated small business. They hand roast coffee and ship it to customers throughout the United States and abroad. Above Time Coffee was launched because they saw a need for more pro-white businesses serving our people. The time has come to take our own side. And did I mention their coffee tastes great? It's the best coffee I've ever tasted. When James brought home a sample from a conference, I was hooked and threw out all the other brands. I think you will too after you make an order at AboveTimeCoffee.com. Living a healthy and active lifestyle is important to us. And I appreciate the effort Above Time Coffee invests in keeping its products organic. And there are so many flavors to choose from. Check it out for yourself by visiting AboveTimeCoffee.com. It's the only coffee we drink at the Edwards home. Delicious coffee, a company that serves the interests of our people. Check out their selection today at AboveTimeCoffee.com.
I think, of course, the situation involving Mahmoud Khalil in terms of a pure freedom of speech and government overreach type of scenario is at once related, but as Gurmar said, different than the discussion about Muslims and their contributions or detriments to white nations. But I want to make, before I make this comment, and I would really interested to hear Gurmar's response because he's a man I respect immensely. GurmarRudolph.com. He's paid the price. When you go to his website, you can learn more about his educational background, his persecution, his books. You can get signed books. Just check it out, GurmarRudolph.com. Gurmar, here's where I am on this. And again, I am willing to be corrected by a man like you on freedom of speech. I'm for it when it serves the best interests of our people, and I'm against it when it doesn't. I don't think that that's hypocritical. I think it's honest. I think it's consistent. I am for what is best for our white European people. You should have never been punished, of course. Now I've got to say, we all know beyond a shadow of a doubt that a Holocaust did happen. It's incontrovertible. It occurred on February the 13th, 1945, in Dresden.
Right.
But I got to say this. The book burnings are something that always gets brought up in World War II history. I'm not against book burnings. Those books deserve to be burned.
Magnus Hirschfeld books.
And some people perhaps should be in prison for that which they believe, which causes them to take actions like these transgender doctors. These people should be in prison. When it comes to free speech, absolutism, I think, you know, that's always been the default position of we dissidents because we've always been on the outside looking in. But again, when it comes to freedom of speech, if we were in a nation that put our people first, I'm not sure that all ideas deserve equal standing in the marketplace of ideas, Gurmar. But again, you're a man who's paid the price for that. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, we're all supposed to be very tolerant of them, but are they tolerant of us?
All right. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree. I'm not a free speech absolutist. I have my own limits that I've set. I have lived in so many societies with so many different rules and regulations and laws and constitutional liberties and so forth that I have to come up and had to come up with something that works everywhere that can be applied universally and that is self-sustaining, I would say. Now, if I were of the opposition, freedom of speech only what serves me but what's detrimental to me, then no freedom of speech. I have to grant the same right to have the same attitude to my opponents or enemies. And if they are in power, they will put me in prison. And according to my own rules that I've set for free speech, I am not allowed to complain that they apply my own rules set to their agenda against me. So, if I were to go with your opinion, I would have to say that my incarceration was correct and I had to put up with it, and it is just because it served to the detriment of those people who are currently in power in Germany. So,
but
if
you were
in
Germany, though, right? You were in Germany when you were arrested in...
he was here.
Right. Well, it's the same here. I mean, the United States have cooperated with the German authorities. They have violated the law here. I was deported against the law in violation of U.S. law. So there was my personal friend, Michael Chertoff, who was running the Department of Homeland Security. He came into the office early 2005, and then the record was faked with a allegedly missed interview that never existed, and that's why I was then arrested and on his personal order deported. So he is a Jewish Zionist who did that to me for obvious reasons. He couldn't throw me in prison for my speech in the U.S., but he could deport me to Germany, who then could manhandle me, and they did.
To the same topic, doesn't it?
All right, go ahead.
Yes, it does. My take on free speech is free speech is unlimited except where it is being misused to promote, advocate, justify, or condone the violation of civil rights of others or their right to self-determination. this is my rule. It doesn't have hate in it. It doesn't have opinions in it. It is just a general attitude that if you use your free speech to deny your opponent free speech, you can't complain if your opponent is in power that he does the same to you. Okay? It's the old golden rule. If you don't want to have something being done to you, don't do it to others. Basically, in a little bit more complex way of putting it. So you shouldn't use your free speech to deny others their civil rights, or else if you do, you can of course do that, you have no right to complain if they in turn turn against you and apply that to you, and you suffer.
On the other hand, Gunnar, if you are tolerant of them, are they tolerant of you? Were you go to
I know
Syria,
they don't.
Example?
I know they aren't, but it's a matter of having the moral high ground. And, you know, at CODA, at the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, free speech lobby group that I'm involved in, have been for many years, we had to set some limits of discourse. Can we have people who justify the use of homicidal gas chambers to kill Jews rather than contest that they existed? You know, open debate on the Holocaust means also to have perhaps people who say, well, the Jews are so evil, they do so much bad things. I hope that Hitler put them all in the gas chamber. And if he didn't, we paid for 6 million. Now let's get the gas chamber and put them in and be done for it. Just, I'm not joking, two, 3 months ago, I got a manuscript from an author in South Africa who had exactly that solution for the problem in the Middle East. Jews going around in Gaza, mass murdering, genocidally wiping Palestinians off the map. The only way he contended was to solve that was to finally build those fucking gas chambers and put them in there and be done with it. And this is something that I cannot accept as a way of arguing on our platform, because if I justify that kind of arguing, that kind of free speech, I cannot complain if next morning I have a letter bomb in my house and it blows up in my face because I got what I asked for. So,
well, in Germany, they have just a little bit too much tolerance, don't you think? They're still giving money to Israel based on some guilt trip that, like you said, is very dubious basis
to begin with. I see, yeah. But
it happens still because they do not have free speech. You can't criticize Jews there. You can't criticize what Israel is doing in Palestine. That's actually now declared a crime, too. So if you say in plain words what the Jewish Israelis or the Zionists or whatever you want to call them are doing in Israel to the Palestinians, you characterize it correctly as genocide, as horrendous atrocities, then you go to prison in Germany. So well, it's the problem of not having free speech that this kind of stuff happens.
I will certainly defer to a man who has paid a far greater price for these issues than I have, and I respect your opinion on this. I you know, it is difficult, though, to go to war with an enemy when they have no sense of decorum, they have no sense of fair play, and I understand in an ideal world we would.
What's mine is mine and what's yours is ours.
Well, I'm just it's a difficult conversation, but it is an interesting conversation, and this has been an interesting segment to hear your answer. I can totally see why you believe that way and why anyone could believe that way and why I could believe that way and why I have. It's just I know that we'll never get that. I know we'll never get that reciprocity from those who are persecuting our people, and so it makes it difficult to imagine a world where we could...
What's the difference between them and you if you get in power and apply the same rules against them?
Well, that's, you know,
them?
I think that's just... No, it's a good question.
That needs to be asked to Khalil, then. Okay.
You are correct, except for the fact that is just the way things have always been settled throughout history. Whoever's in charge can take out their opposition.
Well, I'm not naive not knowing these things. I'm in the position of a very vulnerable idealist who's trying to prevent having parcel bombs sent to him and ending up in not 44 months in prison, but for the rest of my life. That's at stake for me. So I have to have limits to already our self-preservation of how much can I provoke my opponents. I've seen that with Robert Fonson, who has provoked them far more than I have, and Zundel, yes, too. And these people were beaten up, blown up, arsons and letter bomb sends and so forth. So far, so good. I must say, knocking on wood, fingers crossed, I have not had any attempt of violence, of not even demonstration, nothing. Even though where I resided for the past 10, 12 years has always been a matter of public record. So far, it has been peaceful. Maybe they think I'm just a toothless tiger. I'm just this naive free speech idealist who is not going to go anywhere. But of the matter is that with the publications I'm doing, with the encyclopedia I've published, freely accessible at holocaustencyclopedia.com, and the holocausthandbooks.com, all the research we have published, the impact is as it has had was much bigger than a lot of people who had much harsher rhetoric. So being idealist can have a much bigger impact if you do it consistently and well.
We're going to come back with you for one last segment, the great Germar Rudolph, germarrudolph.com. And I will say this, I appreciate what you've said this segment. In a perfect world, this would be the way to go. Hopefully one day we can get there. We'll be right back with Germar Rudolph. Stay tuned.
It is common for politicians, major media outlets, and nonprofits to hype white on black murders aggressively, or even claim that blacks are living in fear of white people.
Lynch for simply being black. Hard to believe, but that's what was done. And some people still want to do that.
This is why National Conservative launched the Interracial Homicide Tracking Project. We have now documented well over 2,000 confirmed interracial homicides since January 2023 and created the most comprehensive overview of these killings anyone has ever made. We plug the gaping holes in data left by other homicide trackers and government crime stats. Rather than engaging in hyperbole and vitriolic rhetoric like everyone else, we are simply creating a massive sample size of empirical evidence so people can form rational and informed opinions about a sensitive and politically charged issue. Visit natcon.life, natcon.life.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Hey, listen, when it comes to these issues, I defer to the man who's paid the ultimate price for it. Well, I mean, short of death, going to prison, that carries weight. He's taken these theories to practice, and that's Germar Rudolph, germarrudolph.com, R-U-D-O-L-F. Spelled the same as Rudolf Dassler. Now, that's an interesting thing, going talking about these things. The Dassler brothers, who created Adidas and Puma, still two of the top three sportswear apparel manufacturers in the world, go back to 1930s and 40s Germany. Who would have thought?
The problem is that the Germans will go against their own people much sooner than they will against the racial the racial strangers, of course,
will go, on the mic.
Will go after our people. You know, we just... Germany is an extreme example of a self-hating culture.
That's all white nations. I mean, they and white Southerners have got it particularly bad, but it's all white nations, and it's got to be corrected. Now, Germar, let's talk about anything we haven't talked about so far this hour. Anything you want to share with the audience, but most importantly, your works, your books, how people can learn more, any websites you want to plug, and then we'll tie this up with a nice full circle come about. To you, my friend.
Yes. All right. Well, as I mentioned, I have focused my entire life on academic style, activity and research. And I keep going that route. As you mentioned, I started with a PhD thesis at the Max Planck Institute for Solid State Research in Stuttgart, Germany. And that set a standard for the rest of my life that is pretty high. And I try to apply what I've learned to the historical studies that I got involved in. Now, it is a matter of constant dripping. Where's the stone? Over the past 35 years, I've been at the head of research efforts that have amassed a massive amount of archival and forensic studies, which I have collected in what I have named the Holocaust Handbooks. By now, we're up to 53 volumes. I'm currently working on number 54, and there's probably more coming. So much, indeed, it fills 6-7 feet in a on a shelf, that it's very difficult to wrap your head around it and to find through it. I have published those, and 15 of them, I think I have been involved as an author myself, but the rest are, it's just other authors' work that I've translated to English, to German, published them, republished them in many, many editions over and over again. 35 years of relentless digging in, trying to find out what is the truth about the Holocaust, because it's not as plain and easy on the surface as it sometimes appears. If you dig deeper, it's rather complex. And at the end of this all, you can access all this research free. Now, that's one of my policies. I want to lower the obstacles for people to get to that knowledge. And one of the obstacles is, of course, I'm getting censored left and right. Amazon throws us out. All the other book dealers throw us out. And bankers and payment processors sabotage us. It's a constant struggle of financial survival. And yet still, everything on holocausthandbooks.com is accessible free of charge. The PDF files can be downloaded, and we are not charging anything. That is just so that nobody has to register, nobody has to pay, nobody has to inform themselves, identify themselves to us or to anyone else in order to get to that information. That has helped us, because there are a lot of mainstream historians, believe it or not, who would never dare identify themselves, but who download this stuff, who read it, and some of them actually, under a pen name from an anonymous email, contact us and tell us there's a mistake, or you can do better there. I have archival material that supports your thesis. I'll give you access to this. So there's collaboration going on behind the scene. This is quite amazing, because we have this generous attitude of giving away whatever we find out free of charge. And I have the same done with the big project that I endeavored on 2 years ago, writing an encyclopedia, after a number of people had told me. These 53 volumes, there's so much information, it's just a complete information overkill. Too much information, TMI. You can't really, you know, if you want to read the whole 53 volumes, you sit there for years, and by the time you're halfway through, you've forgotten what you've read initially. It's just impossible to retain. Even for me, who has created it, who has published and republished, edited and re-edited in the umpteenth edition, these books in German and English, I couldn't find stuff sometimes. So something needed to be done. I created the encyclopedia so that using a keyword, looking up the keyword, you can find the information, all the sources, where you can find more details, linked right on the website, holocaustencyclopedia.com. I don't know why our enemies didn't reserve that domain name. They didn't. I have it. And now you can go there and easily access all the information about the Holocaust, what part of the story is invented, wrong, distorted, exaggerated, and what part of it is true. Because some of it is true, so it's not all fake. And get the links to where it is exactly described. A lot of the stuff is in the Holocaust handbooks. They're all free of charge, accessible. The periodicals where we have research papers published, all accessible free of charge. Always make sure against inner resistance of our own people who want to charge for financial reasons. And no, we are not going to charge. And if I'm a pauper for the rest of my life, this information is going to be free, period. We're at the stage now, we launch another rocket stage. The first stage was the Holocaust Handbook series, just to get the fundamental research done so that we're really sure what is true and what is not. The second is making it accessible as an encyclopedia for everyone to quickly find answers to the questions they have. And the third stage is being launched, hopefully within days, maybe weeks, holocaustacademy.com was reserved by the enemy until half a year ago. We were sitting there because we saw the online academy to indoctrinate the world even more with Holocaust fake disinformation was not making any progress. And then they canceled the project, released the domain name, we grabbed it, and we were in the background preparing our own Holocaust Academy. We will be teaching, partly and mostly, behind the scenes, in private seminars and tutorials, as ghostwriters, editors, peer reviewers, the work of people who want to speak out. Teach influencers, podcasters, anyone who wants to learn the ropes of the Holocaust, its skeptical review, its correction, its debunking where it deserves and needs debunking, in order to step out and be prepared for the attacks that come, be prepared to counter the fake attacks.
Folks, he gave out his contact information there. I only interrupt because we have 2 minutes remaining, and I want to be sure to thank him again for appearing with us tonight to wrap up our march around the world. He is a good man. Check out his websites that he just gave you. Agree, disagree, check it out. Germar extends to his enemies the courtesy that they do not afford him, and that's an admirable thing. I still believe, though, that there are some things, if it is harmful to our people, that should not be allowed. That is a conversation for a society to have. Who am I to say what those things are? A society can come together and make those determinations, I believe, and perhaps should, but I respect Germar's opinion, everything he shared this hour. Coming up later, we're going to continue the conversation on free speech with psychologist Josh Neal, who has a brand new book out published by Antelope Hill Publishing. Germar, with 1 minute remaining, a question in from an audience member. What is the future of white Germans, which is to say, what is the future of Germans, real Germans? It would be easy to say extinction. It would be easy to say that. Is there any path that doesn't lead to that, in your estimation?
Dreamland. They're technically extinct because the generation being born now is a tiny minority in Germany. So, no, the game's over.
Well, that was direct and to the point. But
let me ask you one question, too. Out of the, we hear the 6 million figure used all the time about the victims of the Holocaust. How many, based on your research, actually died because of intentional genocide by the Germans, and how many died by typhus or starvation or whatnot?
I've never really put an exact figure on it. When it comes to typhus, we need to discuss the differentiation between general captives in those camps and Jews, because Jews were maybe in the labor and concentration camps only half of the population, maybe even in some areas less than that. And so they also have a similar percentage in the share of victims. And we're talking about 500,000 victims in a general, broader sense of devastating epidemics and collapse of Germany toward the end of the war.
And on the other hand, Gunnar...
But when it comes to murder, there were no gas chambers, period. But executions
in
the East...
Think of all the people, all the white Christians in Russia that died.
Well, that gets back to Buchanan's book. I mean, you got to go to war against Germany for this, but
Eisenhower probably killed more German soldiers in terms of captured after they surrendered than Jews.
We'll leave it to you, Keith, to ask a question that would take an hour to get an answer on in the last minute. But
I was waiting my turn, right?
It does pique the interest. If it does pique your interest, folks, you can read more of from Germar Rudolph and his research at germarrudolph.com, Holocaust Encyclopedia. He's sitting on some expensive digital real estate. Go, Germar. We have about 15 seconds remaining.
Yes, look up the signed books there. If you want to support me on the gammarudolf.com, signed books, that's where you can get books signed and dedicated to you from me directly.
And please do that, ladies and gentlemen. He's one of a kind. And we'll be back with the second hour right after this. Thank you, Gurmar.